the gliding ocean to the wild Mississippi shore. From the banks of sweet Maryland to the icebound Labrador, it's a scene of magic splendor that is known by one and all. She's a morning combination called a Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, to the rumble and the roar, as she dashes through the woodland that steals along the shore. She's a mighty rushing engine, you can hear them hobos call as they ride the rods and the brake beams on the Wabash Cannonball. Your cities may be fairer, you can plainly see, from St. Paul to Minneapolis and the famous Albany, then back to old Niagara where the laughing waters fall. You can hear them hobos singing on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, to the rumble and the roar, as she dances through the woodland that steals along the shore. She's a mighty rushing engine, you can hear them hobos call as they ride the rods and the brake beams on the Wabash Cannonball. The healthy Daddy Claxton, may his name forever stand and always be respected by folks throughout the land. And when his mortal race is run and the curtains round him fall, we'll carry him home to glory on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, to the rumble and the roar, as he dances through the woodland that steals along the shore. She's a mighty rushing engine, you can hear them hobos call as they ride the rods and the brake beams on the Wabash Cannonball.
Hey, there you go. That is Hank Snow, the world-renowned country singer from a long time ago. And that was his train songs. He sung a lot of train songs. Great songs. White Area Resistance calling. White Area Resistance radio calling. This is White Area Resistance radio. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger. You guessed it, I'm here in the bunker on an overcast and cool day. It said something about going down into the 30s tomorrow night. I can't believe it. When the hell are the posies going to start blooming? This is a hell of a note. Can't even plant my seeds. I got a whole bag, a bunch of seeds to plant, all kinds of stuff, vegetables, flowers, you name it. But the ground is still too cold. The date is May the 4th, 2016, right here. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show, and we got a whole bunch of them in today. My box was almost full. Well, it could have got more, but it was pretty full. Yeah, and we appreciate that. Now we'll go down and get some money orders to send off to the POWs. Let's see here. Where did all this donations come from? We got one from Chaski, Minnesota. Okay. And then we got one from Birmingham, or not Birmingham, but close to Birmingham. And then we got one from, let's see here. Got one from Syracuse. Got one from St. Helen. Got one from Las Vegas. Got one from, wait a minute. Well, up around Spokane. And we got one from Austin, Texas. How about that? So, thank you, boys and girls. And with that, I'll be on with the show here. Boy, wasn't that exciting last night? Of course, I never had any doubt. I knew he was going to win. Too bad. I should have put some money on that election. If I'd have put some money on that election about 2 months ago, I'd have a pocket full of money today, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you, Indiana, all those evangelical Christians, they voted with their pocketbook. They didn't vote for his Christianity, I'll tell you that. Of course, he told them, at Cruz, he conned them. He was a big Christian, but when it came down to the wire, they said, we need jobs, we don't need Jesus, so he only got about 40% of the vote, and Trump got all the rest. Everybody wanted on that Trump train. You ought to hear him whining. I'm right here whining, a lot of them whining, a lot of them are cheering, honking their horns and everything. Yeah. Funniest ones is on PBS radio. They interviewed some preacher out here, and I'm sure there's hundreds just like him. He was crying his eyes out that it's terrible. Who are we going to vote for? We can't vote for these guys. They're not with the baby Jesus, man. And they were just crying their eyes out. You know, they spent $75 million at least to try to knock out Trump, and they failed. Now, why didn't they take that $75 million and put it on Cruz's campaign? If they'd gave him that $75 million they wasted trying to stop Trump, Cruz may have won. Yeah. And just think how all these hundreds of millions of dollars are spent on that campaign all over the country. It had to get up in that kind of figures. But did the people ever stop to think that people are going to spend that much money on the politics? They're the same ones that says they're going to Washington to save you money and straighten things out. See, at least Trump spent his own money. That's good. We should require them all to spend their own money. Then these seasons would be short. Political seasons would be very short. If Cruz had to spend his own money, and Chasick had to spend his, and that Chasick, what an idiot that guy is. He only won in one state, his home state, and then he didn't win by much. That guy's a real chump. He stayed in there as a spoiler, wasting all that money that could have gone to the taxpayers. Yeah. Something else, man. It's something else. But now we got to get ready for it's going to be a knockdown, drag out. Well, I hope it is going to be a knockdown, drag out deal from here on in to the convention. And now, watch all these guys that said they hated Trump now that he's won big time. Watch them all come back with their dragging their tails behind them. That gives you an idea how rotten and corrupt politicians are. And people that don't see that, it just amaze me. They amaze me. We got to unite the party, man. We got to unite the party. Well, I was hoping the party would total destruct, and it still might. But I'm telling you, these people will call each other whores and liars and everything one minute. The next minute, they're in love. Yeah, I'm telling you. And people just still don't get it. Well, a lot of them do. Here's something I found interesting on the internet last night. You know, Cruz disappeared after the big deal last night here in Indiana. He must have been roaming all over the state. He was very upset, and they finally found him, and here's where they found him.
Way down in the state of Georgia, through the swamps and Everglades, the bears in Miller's Cave. man they call Big Dave. Meanest man in Waycross, Georgia. I'd rather fight a mountain lion in Miller's Cave. I said you'll pay both you and the Davy. I must see you in your grave. Their teeth and skin and bones, the Miller's Cave. That woman made me feel unwanted, but I showed her I was brave. Most wanted man in the state of Georgia, but they'll never find me 'cause I'm lost.
Yeah, Cruz got all pissed off that the Christians didn't back him up here and the Republican Party and all that kind of stuff. And so he went down to the Miller's Cave and he ain't come out yet, man. Some people said they heard some sobbing and crying when they walked by the opening of that cave. So that's the latest on Mr. Cruz, one of Canada's finest. Well, let's go back into A Pessimist's Guide to History again, boys and girls. We'll get through this book sooner or later. Let me see. Do I have enough? I don't have enough volume here. Let me see here what I can do about that. Just a second here. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah. There we go. That's enough. Okay. See how nice it was back in the old days. Disappearance of the Monarch of the Seas, 1866. The great waves of European immigrants, and those were immigrants because they were looking for jobs and so forth, and they were wanted, at least by the industrial complex back then, who arrived in the United States during the 19th and early 20th centuries, were just beginning to build when the American ship Monarch of the Sea departed Liverpool, England, on March 19, with nearly 700 passengers aboard. The ship carried mostly English, Irish, and Scottish immigrants bound for New York, along with some 1,600 tons of freight. But the hopeful passengers were not destined to make it to the New World. The 2,000-ton ship disappeared without a trace, presumably sunk somewhere in the mid-Atlantic. No one knows what happened to the 738 passengers and crew, none of whom were ever rescued or seen again. And once again, the bell tolls. That's a terrible tragedy for our race. 1866, firecrackers burned Portland. During the 4th of July celebrations at Portland, Maine, a carelessly thrown firecracker set fire to a boatbuilder's shop. A strong wind quickly spread the flames through the business district, ultimately destroying some 1,500 buildings, but no deaths were reported. 1866, 2,500 homes burned in Quebec fire, just like now. We got 80,000 people fleeing the fires in Canada. What a hell of a fire that is. They said they were like three stories high, the flames. Strong winds buffeted the city of Quebec, Canada, all night, October 15th, but the winds themselves were harmless until at 4 a.m. fires broke out in the home of a grocer. Driven by the unrelenting winds, the blaze quickly spread from one wooden house to another. By the time the firefighters had set up their hoses, almost an hour later, at least 10 houses and numerous shacks had already gone up in flames. The fire spread out of control through city streets lined with wooden houses, and later That day, three separate fires could be seen raging within the city. By the time the fire burned itself out at 5 p.m., 2,500 houses had been destroyed and 18,000 people left homeless. There are going to be a lot more left homeless in this recent fire going on now in Canada. 1868, South American earthquake. Much of South America was rocked by an earthquake on August 13th, with Peru and Ecuador being especially hard hit. Some 20,000 people were killed in the quake. That's Mother Nature's birth control. 1870, Constantinople fire. Beginning on Sunday, June the 5th, when many people were away on a holiday trip, a terrible blaze destroyed a square mile of the ancient city of Constantinople in Turkey, razing some 3,000 buildings in the city's Armenian and Christian districts. Entire families found themselves cut off from escape by the fast-moving fire, while helpless bystanders who were safely beyond the wall of flames watched them perish. Elsewhere in the city, some Muslims surrendered to fate, locking themselves in their houses to await death. Still others, panic-struck, created wild scenes of confusion in the city's streets, as many of Constantinople's finest buildings were consumed by fire. When disaster was over, it was found that the fire, smoke, and collapsing buildings had killed an estimated 900 people. 1870, ironclad warship sinks. A British ironclad turret ship, the Captain, foundered and sank during a storm in the Bay of Biscay on September 6. Most of the ship's crew were among the 483 dead. Bloody Week, 1871. Immediately after France's humiliating defeat in the Franco-Prussian War, an assembly of revolutionary workers gathered in Paris to resist the newly formed government of the Third Republic. With the sympathy of most French National Guard and communes, seized control of Paris in March. Wow, that's a long one. A bloody week and the suppression of the commune lasted from May 21st to the 28th. On May 21st, 70,000 French government troops poured into Paris to retake the city from the rebels. Hey, the rebels. Historian Gabriel Hanatox described the following week, quote, "From this point on, there was war in the streets, but a war without method, without guidance, without chief, a war without discipline. The struggle of despair." Well, that's chaos, the chaos. The street fighting was indeed a war. Commune leaders torched building after building and set fire to the Tuileries Palace. Flames soon engulfed the historic palace, consuming the lavish furnishing it contained and causing the roof to cave in. Meanwhile, strong winds spread fires throughout the city. Thick black smoke filled the air, along with the incessant roar of gunfire in all central quarters of the city. By May 24th, the fury of the struggle increased. The commune was set fire to the ancient municipal building Hotel de Ville. Mass executions began as the commune rounded up and slaughtered its enemies in the streets, priests, archbishops, police agents among them. Meanwhile, the government troops set up tribunals to try, convict, and execute captured rebels. Everybody was killing everybody, Mayor. By the night of May 25th, Hanatox wrote, quote, "The center of Paris was one immense furnace. The Seine, whose waters were already dyed with blood, rolled through Paris like a bed of fire," unquote. Now when men fell dead on the commune street barricades, women and children took their places at the guns as a strange frenzy excited these brave but feeble beings, unquote, Hanatox wrote. On May 26, the all but defeated commune led its last prisoners on a death march through the streets. 48 priests and policemen were slaughtered at once in the Rue Haxo. And you thought ISIS was mean. Finally, the rebellion collapsed on May 28th, and the government troops roamed the streets announcing, quote, "The army of France has come to save you. Paris is delivered. Today the conflict is over. Order is reestablished, and we must have order." Delivered but devastated, nonetheless, some 17,000 people were killed in the fighting and the mass executions before the revolt was put down. And as one witness put it, "Paris the beautiful is Paris the ghastly, Paris the battered, Paris the burning, Paris the blood-spattered now." Each French Republic had its Paris riots. And that's it for today from all that good news from history. Yeah, you need to know that. Because history does repeat itself. Now, where do you think the next big bloodbath is going to take place? New York, San Francisco, Paris, London, Frankfurt? Well, it'll happen sooner or later. You wait and see.
House is behind the terrorism of their population and new evidence from 9/11.
My name is Daniel Bush. Your top officials say the White House is behind the terrorism of their population and new evidence from 9/11. Coming up.
Whistleblowers leak U.S. talks with the head of Al-Qaeda. World Trade 7 is shown on Times Square. And the father of a Twin Towers victim tells us about being attacked by mainstream media.
Decades of terror against their own population blamed on extremists has actually been funded and planned by the White House. Top-level officials in the government and the CIA confirmed a campaign known as Gladio is called by former CIA head Bill Colby a, quote, major operation. In sworn testimony, one of the conspirators confessed, "You have to attack civilians, the people, women, children, far removed from any political game, so authorities can bring in a state of emergency." Dr. Daniel Ganser, author of NATO's Secret Armies, thanks very much indeed for coming on. So mainstream media don't report this, but it is now on the record and officially documented that decades of terror attacks against their own population are in fact organized by the CIA and the White House.
Operation Northwoods, with evidence of Operation Gladio, we have the data now available. And then the people understand that this exists. But they still have a psychological moment where they have a hard time to believe that it still goes on, because it's bad news, you know. It basically means that terrorism can be manipulated in order to move people around like sheep, really. And if you're told you're a sheep and you're being moved by false flag terrorism, I mean, this is really something you don't want to hear.
Yeah, we keep finding this term strategy of tension by the White House. What does it mean?
Strategy of tension actually means that you blow up a bomb and say your enemy did it. What we do have is evidence that this strategy of tension goes on. It's not over.
Bigger than Watergate, the FBI's Dennis Sacker calls U.S. shielding Al-Qaeda leaders up to 2001 and reports veterans today still ongoing. FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds has exposed the, quote, innumerable regular meetings between U.S. representatives and Bin Laden's deputy, now head of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, leading up to September 2001. July 2001, FBI agents closing in on the 9/11 plotters were thrown off the case and threatened with prosecution. Then, when officers arrested Mohammed Khalifa, directly linked to America's most wanted terrorist, Ramzi Youssef, the Secretary of State himself intervened, had Khalifa immediately deported to Saudi and released.
People at the CIA were rich, not even speaking in retrospect, but contemporaneous with what the intelligence community knew. Khalifa's deportation was unreal.
Dr. Kevin Barrett is the author of Questioning the War on Terror. Great to speak to you. We actually have leaders admitting these terrorists are just tools.
And that's what Al-Qaeda is. It's a cat's paw for Western intelligence agencies. And we heard this from the Arab world's leading political commentator, Mohammed Haykal, who told us immediately after 9/11 that this official story of 9/11 is ridiculous. He said when he was at the highest levels of government in Europe, he was the one who was in charge of essentially infiltrating and virtually running so-called Al-Qaeda. He said Al-Qaeda is full of people from Saudi intelligence, from U.S. intelligence, Israeli intelligence, and of course Egyptian intelligence. It couldn't do anything on its own. British scholar Nafis Ahmad, who's one of the world's leading scholars of terrorism and one of the best, talks about an incident that happened in Turkey. I believe this was a little bit before 9/11. A high-level, supposed senior Al-Qaeda commander was arrested in Turkey. And the guards at the prison, who were devout Muslims, noticed that he wasn't praying. He was asking for pork. And they said, "What? You know, we thought you were a radical Muslim." And he kind of laughed and said, no, this is all just a strategy of tension.
This 9/11, the world's top physicists, pilots, engineers joined victims' families to sidestep the mainstream media wall of silence. Huge billboards on Times Square and across the states confront the fact most Americans don't know a third giant tower on 9/11 wasn't even hit by a plane, yet somehow collapsed in free fall. At 5:20 p.m., World Trade 7 suddenly, neatly, and symmetrically just folded like a pancake.
This is high school physics.
A building cannot do free fall with 40,000 tons of structural steel in its structural system without it being blown up.
The government version is that office fires made all 84 steel columns break at the same time. But there are other versions. John Coles, among thousands of leading independent experts with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Great to speak to you. So who did it?
Who didn't do it is the 19 hijackers that allegedly flew the plane. It is impossible. It is impossible to melt that steel by the office fires, the jet fuel, or the collapse itself. It's a physical impossibility. It cannot be replicated experimentally. It defies the laws of physics. If you set aside your politics, you set aside your beliefs and your religion, and you use the scientific method, World Trade Center 7 is basically a classic controlled demolition that where a building free falls and comes straight down into virtually its own footprint. The only explanation that explains all the evidence, the nanothermite, the iron microspheres, the high temperatures found out there, the free fall, the uniform, what I call the uniform acceleration of the towers, when those came down, there was no impact or jolt when it hit the undamaged section below. Because there was no jolt, something blew those towers out, allowing it to uniformly accelerate downward. The only thing that makes any sense at all from a scientific perspective is that those towers were blown up.
John made a mockery of mainstream sites Nat Geo and Pop Mechanics, who've desperately tried, for instance, to show 175 pounds of military nanothermite couldn't break the columns. John did it with just 1 pound.
10 thermite of any type burn through steel beams.
I guess it can.
Renowned librarian and researcher Elizabeth Woodworth has come in to help form the consensus 9/11 panel, confirming it uses best practice with the most rigorous peer review. Thanks so much for joining us. There's this remarkably high consensus among experts that the government version can't be right.
We have some of the top experts in the field who've published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. And yet, these scientific journals exist, like the Harris study, but they're never covered in the media. If people knew about the research, they would find it compelling. Dr. Griffin has said that he'd never heard of anybody who saw the evidence became converted to this point of view and then changed back.
Yeah, the panel's made government already change its story and admit Skyscraper 7's freefall.
That's right. David Chandler is an extraordinary model maker. Chandler is on the panel, and he devised a model to prove that the top floors fell with no resistance. There's only one way that can happen, and that is that all the columns, there are 84 of these columns, that they were severed at the same moment.
Dr. Graham McQueen accessed the New York Fire Department records from that day. Thanks very much for joining us. Never broadcast by mainstream media, but more than 100 witnesses have even reported the explosives bringing down the Twin Towers.
Here was this roughly 10,000 pages of extremely rich eyewitness material. And I found that there were 118 people who clearly perceived explosions. You know, we have firefighters who are used to fighting high-rise fires. who are used to encountering smoke explosions and boilers, and yet they use words like bombs. You know, they don't identify with the things we would expect.
Four by four, instead of popping out.
It was if they had detonated.
Detonated.
Yeah. Take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
All the way down.
Bob McIlvain has wanted answers why the post-mortem of his son Bobby found his fatal injuries in the South Tower consistent not with fireballs, but explosives. Yet mainstream host Rachel Maddow here recently sneered he's not only a conspiracy theorist for asking questions, but also attempted to connect him to violence and Al-Qaeda.
All of these nefarious conspiracies about government plots to kill and conspire and lie about it and cover up the real truth. I mean, this stuff is as ridiculous as it has ever been, but it is as ridiculous as it is dangerous.
Bobby's father joins us. Thank you very much for speaking with us. How do you feel first losing your son and now being portrayed as the bad guy?
My son died. He died from an explosion. I can prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. If I was in a courtroom, a jury cannot not accept that as proof. So that's where we have our problem. When I say, well, this is an inside job. Well, my son died from an inside job from someone putting bombs, detonations. I would make her sit in this room and go through what I just went with you. And then I would say, now you tell me I'm a conspiracy theorist. This shows you how awful our media is. I don't want to call her a the media. She makes over $1 million, and they tell her what to say. One newspaper reporter, and is from the Philadelphia area, was very upfront with me. She said, you know, Bob, she says, as a reporter, I am the problem because we will lose our jobs. If I take that, just that little bit you just said to the editor, he will crush it. So I'm telling you right now, I can't put your story out there. The media owners will not allow them. The press would not cover just that because it put a little doubt in people's minds.
Yeah, who do you blame for all this?
The people of the United States are just as much to blame because they just want to believe that we are good people. We are an exceptional country. But this is what governments do. You know, it's very Machiavellian. Now we have an endless war on terror. I know what these people in Iraq, I know what these people in Syria, I know what these people in Libya, Afghanistan are going through because they're all losing children. And that's what it's all about. Everybody's losing family members. And it's pure hell. So that's it, Daniel.
Tomorrow, Congress votes to bomb Syria, the latest war of the post-9/11 era. The U.S. would now officially be Al-Qaeda's air force, notes former Congressman Kucinich. But America's had enough. 9 in 10 oppose this invasion, the most unpopular in history. Regarding 9/11, a massive 84% now say the government's lying. We now have the precedents documented that government's prepared to commit supreme crimes against its population. Exactly what happened on 9/11 can be argued by both so-called conspiracy theorists and the authorities. What's beyond dispute is on the 11th of September, the world will join to mourn the almost 3,000 innocent people who lost their lives. This is the Truth Seeker.
Well, most of you people have known this stuff for a long time. And a whole lot of the public, a large percentage of the public, have heard things like this. So they can't claim ignorance. What's it going to take? A Paris-type revolt, like I just read to you? Probably, because that's the only way they'll get the message. You have an absolute criminal government. All phases are rotten to the core, and you got to get that through your head. That's why what's going on politically now with this Republican Party and all that is... they're shuffling around and they're trying to rearrange the chairs on the Titanic. Something's going to blow. And there's going to be some big change here. And that's, of course, why I support Trump. I wouldn't vote for him, but I'd support him as spreading chaos. Because out of chaos comes order. Maybe our order, maybe their order. Who knows? But if you look at this government anymore, as any kind of representative, honest, legal representation of yourself, you're a fool. If you don't look at it as an absolute powerful criminal conspiracy and like that, you're a fool. because when they bullshit you in the news, just laugh at them. Laugh at them. And you'll be better off. You got to keep laughing, keep from crying. Every time I hear this American exceptionalism, I want to puke. Get ready for another wave of crime because they're getting ready to pass this Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act of 2015 on the excuse of letting lesser offenders out of prison that have been put there for marijuana and things like that. But behind the scenes, what they're going to do is they're going to release the worst of the worst. And they're not going to release any of our people, I'll guarantee you that. So watch out for another wave of untouchable crime. Yeah. You can be sure that no law passed anymore in Washington has anything to do with helping the people in the street or the working people of this country. It's all designed against you. Well, do you feel it coming? Do you hear it coming? Tick, tock, tick, tock. It's slowly and actually quite quickly moving in that direction of what we've been talking about for years. It's coming. It's coming. Now, will the campaign conventions, the convention in New York or wherever it's going to be for the Republicans, is that where it's going to start? Or is it going to start with the Democrats? Well, it's going to start somewhere. And once it starts, Katie barred the door shut. There's a man under the bed. I see this Glenn Pecker, this right-wing con artist on the radio. He's ended his fast. I didn't read how long he was on a fast. And then he put his face in a bunch of goop. And I got a picture of him looking like he's nuts. This guy's nuts. He's a super-duper Israel supporter too. Unbelievable. He's like all these crazy people that are around here in the Midwest, all over the country actually. These crazy Christian Zionists. And his moron George Clooney, which is not a bad actor, but he's running around saying, we got to take in more Syrians. We got to take in more Syrians. We shouldn't be taking in anybody. It's time to be pushing people out, not bringing them in. And we don't want to build a wall because that would keep them enclosed in the United States. You couldn't get them out. We want that open so we can shove them back across the border, big time wholesale. Well, I see that the Black University of Iowa, a black freshman, has told the police that he was severely beaten by three white men who called him racial slurs, and they're looking for those three white men. That's going to turn out probably to be a false flag operation, but it's sort of sick and sad that the whites are so cowardly that couldn't possibly be whites that beat up the black because they don't have the balls. And if they did, it would be a stupid move. That's not the way you fight this problem of the untouchables. Well, I see down in San Diego, this black guy was attacked by three Mexicans. Yeah, Friday, January 22nd in Fallbrook. Wow, my alma mater. He died 2 weeks later in a hospital from injuries he sustained during the attack. The accident was captured on a security camera in the parking lot near Albertson's grocery store. I know where that's at. After months of investigation, San Diego Sheriff's Department official Lieutenant Ken Nelson gave on Monday, May 2nd, a comprehensive report on their findings. How about that in my old alma mater? I lived there 40 years. Nice little town when I moved in. Turned to shit when I moved out. Bottom of this article, it says, it is so heartbreaking to see people are being killed in America just just because of their skin is dark. These men should face the strictest punishment possible, and they never should be able to pose a threat to any black person again. Well, if you think that the reason blacks are attacked or have problems because of the skin color, you're entirely mistaken. It can be partially their skin color as an indicator of who they are, but it's how they live and how they act in the whole race. If you don't take that into consideration, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, there was a movie once where a guy put on this chemicals and turned himself black and walked around to experience how horrible it was. Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you took 100 white people and dyed their skin black and then followed their livelihoods for the next 10 years, you'd probably find maybe one or two that committed a crime. But the real thing, the real black-skinned people, the percentage is much, much higher. And if you were able to turn their skin white, it would still be the same percentages of crime. See, Obama's daughter is getting ready to go to Harvard. Well, there's a book came out in the 60s called Poverty is Where the Money Is. And if all the poverty money that they collected had gone to where it was supposed to go, every black kid in the country at that time could have gone to Harvard, not just the president's daughter. Well, a hate crime hoax? I can't believe it. A hate crime aimed at black students at Maryland's Salisbury University has been revealed as just the latest high-profile race-related hoax to hit the grooves of academia in the race-obsessed Obama era. Well, except for acknowledging that two perpetrators were African-American untouchable students at the school that is located at the Delmarva Peninsula in eastern Maryland, the university is engaged in a cover-up. If the perpetrators were white, a cynic might say that the school would find a way to leak out the pertinent details in order to make the political statement. Of course, there certainly are racist incidents on university campuses, well, mostly black on white, but blacks are rarely targets or victims. Blacks are more likely to be the instigators or the beneficiaries of racist acts. Racially discriminatory admissions policies are a kind of reverse apartheid and part of what David Horowitz has termed black privilege. Such policies help unqualified African Americans, untouchables, get into some institutions of higher learning while keeping academically qualified Caucasian, whites, and Asians out. All. I'm shocked. I'm surprised. I'm appalled. I don't know who's doing this, but they say that the cigarettes may go to $40 a carton, or maybe that's $40 a pack, on the budget in 2016. Claims the tobacco industry. Well, they should subsidize it then, because these people are addicts. People who smoke become addicts, I know. And they could, if they're going to keep making cigarettes and distributing them, then the government's going to have to subsidize for these addicts to have their cigarettes and feed their habit, right? They do it for everything else. Google's got a system where you can bring up any subject that's in the news, and I've got one that's based on Jew crime, but in Jew crime, you never see actual Jew crime. You always see crimes against Jews, like Jews never commit a crime, and you know how much of bullshit that is. Why don't we ask Google, how come they don't put real Jewish crime on their news updates? Well, here's a report from one of our lone wolves. I forgot to send out the information about the FBI's attempted setup. Could have been ATF. The FBO owner at the airport befriended me a few months back. We went out to the hangar owned by a friend of his one day to look for something. At that time, he told me that the old man owned the hangar who owned the hangar, had hid $40,000 in it somewhere. A few weeks later, the police came to my house looking for a lost girl and wanted to look around. I just remembered reading this article. I'll send this article to you. This friend of mine was an informant. I'm about 90% sure. It is true that a lot of rich people have hangars, and there is likely money and stuff in them, and they are usually not very well secured. But I suspect they put a camera in there and were waiting for me to go in and steal something. It really worries me that what really worries me is not very hard to set up a person. I knew someone that told me that his wife put some crystal meth in his car and called the cops. He had some friends to get him out of it, but there are so many ways they can set you up. So they're trying to put me in prison. I'll come out of prison more dangerous, that's for sure. Thank you for that report, and that's a warning to all of you people. It can appear to be very innocent, but in fact, you're being set up. If it doesn't smell right, walk away from it. Well, here's that article connected to our Lone Wolf report. Topeka, Kansas. A Kansas woman who took her children to perform for occupiers during the armed takeover of an Oregon wildlife refuge, that's where the militias were, earlier this year, says authorities have removed 7 of her children from her home and arrested her for assaulting an officer. Odalis Sharp, 46, of Auburn, was booked into Shawnee County Jail Friday evening for battery of an officer and interfering. If you even touch a cop, they'll charge you with that. Remember that. Interfering with a law enforcement officer, jail officials told the Kansas City Star. Of course, you can't believe a goddamn thing those cops say. No charges have been filed as of Tuesday morning. The Shawnee County Prosecutor's Office could not be reached for comment. Sharp was released Saturday on $3,000 bond. This is total harassment, and this is why you got to stay away from these crazy deals like that. I mean, what do they think they were proving up there? Those occupiers. What did they prove? What did they win? What did they, you know, but what did they lose? Well, a lot of them lost quite a bit. One man lost his life. Let the system eat its own tail. You know, it's going to devour itself. Just let it happen. Don't get in between. I see a black soldier down in Texas. This white guy was trying to intercede in a dispute between a husband and a wife, and a black guy pulled a gun and shot him dead. Now, you see, this is the thing I keep telling you. Guy tried to do a good thing, but he did a stupid thing. You got to stay out of this stuff, because all these people are carrying guns. Most of them are hidden on their body, you know, and you get involved and try to help somebody, and you get a bullet in your head, so watch it. Remember that black guy, that Representative John Lewis, that short, fat little guy that got rustled around when he tried to enter Congress last year, a couple of years ago? Well, I got news for you. He will get the prestigious Eli Wiesel Award. Yeah, the Holocaust Museum is going to honor this civil rights leader. Whoopee! Da 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 da. Oh, we can't get any kind of racial literature into the prisons, but the court in Texas ordered the prisons to allow Muslim beards and caps. Yeah. And I imagine they're getting all kinds of good stuff in there, too. Reading material from ISIS. Well, here's an interesting one. On April 28th, I joined a multiracial group of Christian ministers and scholars in releasing a statement confessing resistance to Donald Trump as a Christian obligation. Indeed, I helped draft the statement, signed by dozens of leaders such as Jim Wallis, Otis Moss III, Shane Claiborne, and Lisa Sharon Harper. I think I might have told you about this. This statement was very carefully drafted after multi-rounds process of conversation and editing. Evangelicals, such as many of us are, would say that it is written prayerfully. While we have not encouraged others to sign it, we hope the statement will be widely shared. Yeah, I did read that to you. Well, they're out there, man. Christ insanity, people. Here's an interesting little story. Last month, Britain's National Union of Students, which claims to represent some 7 million students across 600 campuses, debated whether it should even commemorate Holocaust Memorial Day. That this was a subject for argument is absurd enough. The actual proceedings were scandalous. Quote, "Of course there shouldn't be anti-Semitism," said a student, speaking against the measure, offering the sort of throat-clearing assertion which from which anti-Semitism almost inevitably follows, "but it is not about one set of people." Yeah. The fracas took place against the backdrop of resurgent anti-Semitism in the British higher education and politics. Earlier this year, a co-chairman of the Oxford University Labour Party Club quit after claiming that a large number of his students, his members, have some kind of problem with Jews. Meanwhile, at the same convention where it debated the propriety of commemorating the Holocaust, the NUS elected as its president a young woman named Malia Boidia, who had previously opposed a declaration condemning ISIS, railed against the Zionist-led media, and advocated in favor of violent Palestinian resistance against Israel. Responding to critics in the pages of The Guardian, Bataya began by noting that she was the first black woman and the first Muslim to be elected president of NUS. You see, they got caught on their own petard. They leave all these people into the country, and now they're crying, and the Jews are crying. They want to get rid of the Holocaust Memorial. While the NUS measure endorsing Holocaust commemoration eventually passed, Darta Khalija, a student at Chester University, no doubt spoke for many of her student comrades when she complained in loud applause that she wasn't against commemorating the Holocaust per se, but rather prioritizing some lives over others. In my 5 years of UK education, not once were the genocides of Tibet, Rwanda, Zanzibar taught to me and my peers. This is as logically fallacious as it is morally obscene. In no way does Holocaust remembrance obviate the educational efforts about other slaughters, but they don't memorialize it, buddy. They don't memorialize it. On the contrary, the homepage of Britain's Holocaust Memorial Day Trust includes links to the informational resources on the genocides in these other countries. But they don't memorialize it. One might expect Khalija to be a Muslim of Arab extraction, given the widespread resentment in those communities toward the memorialization of Jewish suffering. She's apparently from Latvia, however, where the locals did an especially thorough job of wiping out their Jewish neighbors without much prompting from the Germans. Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, the water's rising. 5 feet high and rising. It's amazing how people make their own bed and then they don't want to lie in it. You know, they bring all these Muslims and everybody in that has an axe to grind with the kikes, the Jews, and then they exhibit their distrust and dislike of Jews, and then everybody goes crazy. What do you bring them in the first place, you idiot? Just can't make those Jew boys happy. They're always upset about something. And if they're not upset about something, they'll come up with something to get upset about. I do believe they enjoy being persecuted. I know people will say, "Oh, that's crazy." Well, I don't know. There's certain people, you know, that go into these matrixes' houses and they whip them with whips and hang them with chains and everything else. We all should know that a big share of porno and all that kind of weird sex stuff is promoted and spread by the Jewish people. The offense description in this story, in a criminal complaint filed last week against James Gonzalo, Medina, I wonder what race he is, in the U.S. District Court for Southern District of Florida reads, quote, attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction against any person or property within the United States. I guess they call an M-80 or a big firecracker a weapon of mass destruction. Obviously, my thoughts are weapons of mass destruction. The alleged target, the Adventura Turnberry Jewish Center in Adventura, Florida. I briefly mentioned this the other day. A 17-page affidavit released on Monday details the case against Medina, who, if convicted, could face life in prison. According to the Miami Herald, according to the complaint, the FBI foiled Medina's plot thanks to an undercover operation by the South Florida Joint Terrorism Task Force. See, boys and girls, you're warned all the time, during which an FBI agent provided Medina with a dummy bomb. You see, look, you want to bomb somebody, they'll even make the bomb for you. Medina is currently being held in a federal prison and has a bond hearing set for Thursday. Yeah. The complaint provides us with the charges against Medina, not his defense. He's yet to be tried, but it tells a scary story nonetheless. It's worth reading in full, if only to learn about the activities of a person who allegedly tried to murder a group of Jews on Passover in Florida. Wonder what the Jews did. It's a horrifying prospect, one that feels presence. Here is some of the complaint's chilling details. Get ready for this, boys and girls. On the evening of March the 27th, an FBI confidential human source had a conversation with one of Medina's associates who said Medina told him that he wanted to go blow up. I mean, not blow, but like shoot up a synagogue in Adventura, to shoot it up and then die while shooting it up, like a martyr. He had planned to use AK-47s, the FBI source recorded the conversation. One of Medina's associates, there you go, there's another one. His buddy, his friend, on April 1st, the CHS and Medina met, drove around and spoke about when a good time to plan the attack would be. How come these guys always have to have somebody hold their hand? They can't do anything without somebody to hold their hand. And usually that's an informant. The CHS suggested Yon Kippur, and Medina agreed. That'll be a good day to go and bomb them. Both had mistaken Yon Kippur for Passover. Well, what the hell? Medina, 40, then decided, based on the suggestion of the FBI informant, that he would print up something to make it look like it's ISIS here in America in order to provide a clue as to who was responsible for the attack. Medina, the complaint states, felt the news of this attack conducted in this manner would go nationwide and inspire other Muslims to attack as well. So this guy Medina was a Muslim. How about that? Muslims, they're not criminals. They're just good people looking to improve their life. Medina, the complaint states, converted to Islam 4 years ago, and in court said he also goes by James Muhammad. I'm suspecting this guy may have been black, but I don't know. He explained to the FBI, the affidavit says, that he would conduct an attack. He would want it to do it at a synagogue because the Jewish people are the ones causing the world's wars and conflicts. Well, do you think that there are no Jews causing world wars and conflicts? I think you'd have a problem trying to deny it. I think there's plenty of proof around they have. Medina further explained that the plot that he and BH, the informant, had discussed allowed them to strike back at the Jews by going to a synagogue and just spraying everybody. Because you're Muslims, you know what I mean, unquote. It's a war, man, and it's like it's time to strike back here in America. Wow. Medina, the CHS, and another one of Medina's associates then scoped out. Now he's got another third guy involved. Out of the Aventura synagogue, the affidavit states, and developed an escape route to be used after the attack. Well, might as well forget those escape routes. The FBI source then proposed leaving an unspecified object behind and leaving the scene, the affidavit states, and Medina went for it. Just pop that bitch and we're out, Medina allegedly said. Medina and the FBI source continued to plan the attack and conducted further surveillance of the synagogue. Okay, now we got three guys involved in something that one guy could do, if he was a mind to. And if it made any difference, if it had anything really important to come up with. I mean, what are you going to do? Stop all the Jews in the world from their skullduggery by bombing one synagogue, you know? Well, we had Glenn Miller. They got their Medina. Medina first wanted to place the bomb inside the synagogue building and speculated whether he should leave it in a restroom, adding, I gotta plan it out. The CHS cautioned that they should plant the bomb outside the building instead while they're inside the service and then drive away. That don't make much sense to me, does it to you? This was a reference to timing the attack while the congregation was inside the building. So he wanted to plant a bomb outside the building? Medina wanted to witness the explosion, hearing and feeling the blast from a nearby car. Quote, I want to see that shit go off, for real. I want to hear that shit. I'll have the windows down on the car so I can hear. I think it must have not been a very big explosion if he couldn't hear it with the windows up on a car. Finally, according to the report, Medina met with an undercover FBI employee. Now we got four poor people involved in this. And the CHS had told Medina that the UCE could provide him with explosive expertise and access. So now they're bringing in the whole federal bunch. Everybody's getting into this. Going to help this guy do his thing. This is entrapment if there ever was one, you know. Why didn't they sit him down and say, look, stupid, this is a mistake. Don't get involved with it. Don't carry out this thing. Go home and have a beer. They'll never do that, though, because they have to have arrests and big news stories. Who repeatedly asked Medina about his motivations. Why are you doing this? And the details of the attack. Medina, in exchange, repeatedly confirmed his readiness. He later provided the UCE with a leaflet with the words ISIS in America on it. They decided on April 29, 2016, Passover, as the day of the attack, the complaint states. On that day, Medina took possession of what was described as what he believed to be an explosive device handed to him by the Federals. Oh, gee, they do this all the time. Unbeknownst to Medina, the device was inert and posed no danger to the public. What he ought to have done was grab those three guys that were with him, especially the ones that could have been an informant, put handcuffs on them all and took them with him and planted the thing. Of course, they knew it was fake, so that wouldn't work. At this time, Medina was briefed on the operation of the device and given instructions regarding its use. Train the guy, every aspect, how it works, how to plant it, where to put it. A judge with any sense would throw it out of court. Therefore, Medina and the UCE drove towards the target location in Aventura, Florida. After Medina exited the vehicle with what he believed was an explosive device in one hand, how big a thing was this? It couldn't have been any bigger than a few firecrackers. with the intention of placing and detonating it near the Jewish Center Synagogue. He was taken into custody as he approached the target location. Well, how could you have a handful of explosives outside a well-constructed synagogue blow up and kill a bunch of people inside? It's not possible. It's not possible. Prior to his meeting with UCE, Medina made three videos on the CHS cellular telephone. One, he stated, "I am a Muslim, and I don't like what is going on in this world. Join the club. I'm going to handle business here in America. Aventura, watch your back. ISIS is in the house." In other words, he stated, "Today is going to be a day when Muslims attack America. I'm going to set a bomb in Aventura, Florida." In the third, he said his goodbyes to his family because he didn't expect to survive. This is not Medina's first run-in with authorities, reported CBS Miami, as he was previously arrested in 2012 in Coral Springs, accused of stalking by sending text threatening gun and bomb violence against the family, unquote. The Aventura Turnberry Jewish Center has since released a statement stating that they were assured that the synagogue and the school were never at risk at any time during the investigation and arrest, and that there were no credible threats directed against us at the present time. Well, you know, when the real thing comes along, you'll be talking a different language. I mean, what if a real pro or one of these well-trained ISIS guys come along and know about infiltration and snitches and all that and know how to do this stuff, you better watch out, because you're dealing with amateurs now. Well, that's almost all the exciting news for today. I'll save some of it for tomorrow. Tomorrow is Thursday, right? Yeah, we'll be back in here and see if we can't dig up some more crap and expose the government and the media and the feds and all of them for what they really are, a bunch of total, corrupt, murderous assholes. Bye-bye.
Let me tell you about Ahab, the Arab, the Sheik of the burning sands. He had emeralds and rubies just a-dripping off of him, and a ring on every finger of his hand. He wore a big old turban wrapped around his head and a scimitar by his side. And every evening about midnight, he'd jump on his camel named Clyde and ride silently through the night to the Sultan's tent, where he would secretly meet up with Fatima of the Seventh Day, the swingest number one dancer in the Sultan's whole harem. 'Cause like him and her had a thing going, you know, and they've been carrying on for some time now behind the Sultan's back. And you could hear him talk to his camel as he rode out across the dunes. His voice would cut through the still night desert air, and he'd say, "Oh, yo, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 yeah." Which is Aramaic for "whoa, baby." And Clyde say, "Well," he brought his camel to a screeching halt in the rear of Fatima's tent. Jumped off Clyde, snuck around the corner and into the tent, and he went. There he saw Fatima laying on a zebra skin rug, with rings on her fingers and bells on her toes and a bone in her nose, ho, ho. There she was, friends and neighbors laying there in all her radiant beauty, eating on a raisin and a grape and an apricot and a pomegranate, a bowl of chitterlings, two bananas, three Hershey bars, and sipping on an ROC Coca-Cola, listening to her transistor, watching the Grand Ole Opry, and reading Mad Magazine while she sung, "Does your chewing gum lose its flavor?" And Ahab walk up to her and he say, "Oh, yeah, 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 oh, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah." Which is Aramaic for "let's twist again like we did last summer, baby." And she say, "Crazy, baby."
sudden the Sultan walked in. Ahab knew that this was the end. Him and Fatima was caught by surprise, and the Sultan had fire flashing out of his eyes. Well, the Sultan charged at Ahab, intending to make a dent in his head. But he fled with Fatima, and out of the tent they went. They jumped on Clyde and started to ride, cutting out across the sand, with the Sultan's whole army in hot pursuit. On and on they ran. Well, to make a long story short, they got away, cause there weren't no animal alive what could keep up with Clyde once he got started, cause he would have swift his steed on the old desert babies. And they made it across the border where Ahab popped all his rubies and emeralds, and they bought him a swinging little split-level pad and lived happy ever after. Yeah, and that's the story about Ahab, the Arab, the Sheikah, the burning.